You're listening to Dietitian Power Hour with Morgan, Cody, and Libby. Grab a drink and enjoy.
We're recording. Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 3.
Episode 3.
Season 2. Dropping hot beats.
Yeah. IF.
IF. And we're here in person. I can see faces. It's making me really happy. Morgan looks cute as always. Cody's also adorable. We're in Cody's cute little apartment. That's like shiplap wet dreams, folks.
It's so everywhere. Cute.
That's one way to put it.
And it's Cody's birthday.
Happy birthday, Cody.
Happy birthday.
Woo! Okay, this side note, do you guys feel like it's kind of weird when we're in person? Like, I'm not used to podcasting and doing our podcasting conversations when I can see faces. It's great, but
yeah,
it's different. I love it.
Yeah. Also, like I think you said intermittent fasting, but we're doing gut health today.
Mother ever.
Stuck in the past. So last week.
Totally. Yeah, today's gut health. And as you can hear, we all did our homework, and we are all drinking wine today.
Mm-hmm. Clearly.
Different wines, though.
Different wines.
Me and Libby are having a Cab Sav.
Mm-hmm. From Kirkland brand.
Ooh, which is how you say that, a Cab Sav.
I'm a wine gal now, Cody.
Oh, yeah. She really knows.
It's fruity with a hint of tannins.
With a barnyard aftertaste.
She's beefy and dry, like a stoma.
Okay, now we have to explain what a stoma is.
Oh, you know, like when you have an ostomy coming out of your intestine. And it catches your poo.
Mm-hmm. It's basically a hole on the outside of your body.
And a stoma, it looks like a little lightsaber that's pink and should be beefy and red in appearance is a healthy stoma.
Also, I brought a bottle of wine to Cody's house today, and he even own a wine bottle opener. So we had to improvise, couldn't get it open. So thank God Libby came with a box instead to save the day.
Yeah.
But failed because usually I have a wine opener in my freaking purse and it's not there. So I don't know where it is. It's upsetting.
We were like prying with a claw hammer and like.
And an eyelet hook.
Needle-nose pliers and the bottle was horizontal basically. So I don't know what would have happened if we got it open.
And Cody is drinking a.
I'm drinking white wine Sauvignon Blanc. So it's
Blanc.
Sav Blanc. Thank you. Yes, I want to feel fancy too. Sav Blanc. Thank you very much.
Which is a dry white wine with a hint of sweet.
Yeah, this one's pretty sweet actually. It's a pretty cheap box wine, but
no, it's a bougie. It's a black box. These are the bougie boxes.
Oh, they are.
Those are bougie.
It's a step above Boda, and a Boda is like 12 steps above.
Like the kind that you slap.
Franzia, the one my grandpa was used to get.
Franzia is the kind that you slap the bag and then chug.
Yeah. Franzia is college. Tour de Franzia. That's what we used to do. Every room was a different bag. This is pre-global pandemic, so we all shared.
Yeah. Don't try that at home, kids.
No.
But it is a good time.
Yeah, do not recommend. And we're on a bit of a time crunch today, so we're just going to
do a quick
slap into it.
Slap the bag. Yeah. And talk about gut health.
Yes, we're going to talk about gut health and how it's important.
The gut microbiome.
Yes.
Yeah.
Someone want to recap? What is our gut microbiome?
Yeah.
So in your gut, you have billions.
Trillions. I dare say.
Trillions.
Dare you.
The wine went straight to his head. Now he's all fancy. Trillions of little organisms that just exist in your gut. And there's a ton of different species and genre.
Yeah. So basically, bacteria that have like a symbiotic relationship with humans, right? Because there's bacteria that can be harmful to your health, and then there's bacteria that actually help your body, like specifically in your guts, it helps you with digestion, right?
Mm-hmm. And you can have both good and bad in your gut.
Right.
And also, I mean, obviously bacteria are, they can be harmful or they can be beneficial, but mm-hmm. the good gut microbiome, those are helping when you eat, you know, a bad oyster. Those facilitate you not having an instant reaction, and not always, right? Obviously, if you eat a bad mm-hmm. oyster, you're gonna probably shit your brains out. But your gut microbiome is there to kind of buffer some of that bacteria that comes in on your food.
Right.
So it's important to keep it healthy.
Which also is like, because your gut is basically a direct interface between your body, like the outside environment, quote unquote outside, and your immune system.
Yeah.
Right.
It's that, what's it called? I'm blanking.
Oh, it's like a barrier? Like,
yeah, the barrier.
Your blood-brain barrier?
No.
That's what
I'm hearing. I'm thinking of the gut-brain barrier.
Are you?
I think the lumen of inside the gut.
Yeah. It's like a... what is it? It's like, I swear the word barrier is in it.
I don't
the barrier?
Remember.
I don't know, but it's like
your
an
gut
immune...
mucosa.
Yeah, and it helps with immune response.
Yeah.
All the little microvilli and the...
They're like, choo, choo, choo.
Yeah. And we're all making hand motions. Like, you can see it.
Our fingers are out and they're twinkling.
Twinkle hands. But yeah, so today, like, we're going to specifically just talk about gut health, how we can boost it, mm-hmm. what it does. Mm-hmm. Fiber. We're going to talk about that. Mm-hmm. It's a common theme and my favorite topic.
Right.
So, I kind of want to start like with how we can help our gut microbiome. And number one on my list to talk about is, besides fiber, is probiotics.
Yes.
I was thinking the same thing, and they're so trendy right now.
Yes.
So I'm excited to talk about them.
Yes. You can get kombucha on tap, folks. This is the time for
a
healthy
diet. Oh my gosh. When we went to Bend a few months ago.
Yeah.
Oh, they had kombucha on tap. They had gluten-free beers. Anyways. That's where it's at.
Yeah.
For
gut health. If you want good gut, go to Bend.
Oregon.
We should get that on a t-shirt. Gives good gut.
You're like, what?
So probiotics, what foods come to mind when you guys think of probiotics? Like, where can we get them?
Fermented foods. That's what I think. So that's kombucha, kimchi.
Mm-hmm.
Yogurt, kefir.
And yes, if you don't know what kefir is like a fermented dairy product that's kind of like yogurt, but more of a liquid.
Yeah, like, it's like a liquid yogurt. It tastes very much like a plain, unsweetened, like Greek yogurt,
mm-hmm.
but it's in a liquid form, so it's drinkable. It's very viscous. It has a texture.
And you can get them flavored, too. You can get like flavored kefir, just like yogurt, but different. Same, but different.
Yeah.
I've never tried kefir.
Oh, it's delicious.
I
keep it in my fridge at all times, and I drink like a half a cup a day.
Oh, wow.
Usually I either put it in my smoothie, or I just like drink it with my eggs in the morning.
Ooh,
wow.
Love that.
So, yeah.
I feel like it's
important to me.
So we should distinguish. So probiotics, but then there's also prebiotics and the gut microbiota or gut microbiome. So probiotics are basically good types of good bacteria.
Yeah.
That are going to colonize the gut, right?
Yes, you're feeding and producing more beneficial bacteria in your gut with the use of a probiotic. So it's anything with live culture.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go shopping for yogurt, you want to read the label because, you know, all sorts of yogurt have live, what the fuck am I saying?
Live cultures
in them, but not all. So you have to read the label and it'll say, you know, has live cultures. So it could be Greek or it could be regular if you're not into Greek.
Mm-hmm.
Greek yogurt does have more typically, which is why it's a little more sour. And then like for sauerkraut, I love sauerkraut, but it does have to be not the like in the pickle aisle sauerkraut, but the kind that's in the freezer or refrigerator section because it still has the live cultures because they haven't killed it off by preserving it in a canning process, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
right, the high heat kills it. But, and I don't know how, I haven't looked into this as much recently, but I've heard that even if it is the pickled sauerkraut, there's other like kind of byproducts from when that bacteria did exist, like it's different types of acids and things that are still in that product that are still beneficial, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there just wouldn't be any live culture. But
there
it's still,
be any live
cultures. I mean, it's still fermented cabbage. cabbage has a ton of, like, it's super high in vitamin C. It's one of the highest vitamin C foods outside of your citrus and stuff. So it's still great. If you like sauerkraut, get on it, man. Delish. I put it on everything. I love sauerkraut.
Me too. Me too.
But it's homemade, which is, you know, better.
Oh, you guys make your own?
Yes.
We used to do that.
It's very German of us, isn't it? It's
yeah,
a
yeah.
Shorts thing. Did you do
put
it?
Put it in the crock.
Yeah.
Just let it, like,
yes. Did you do it with, like,
tons of salt?
With your Schwartz?
We actually did it on the Duclos side. So the other side, we did it, and sausages. And...
So for those listening who didn't know, Cody and I are distant cousins. Like,
yeah.
Like our grandparents,
the
cousins,
Fox
probably.
Family.
Super German.
We might say it in German.
So.
Yeah. So, and then prebiotics are, so we, Libby talked a little bit about fiber prebiotics. You hear that term a lot, but it's basically different types of fiber, right? So your body can't break it down. We don't have the enzymes, but these bacteria that live in our guts do. So they help us out.
And it's kind of like food for the probiotics because they're living things and they need food too. And they like fiber.
Yeah.
And so that's what prebiotics are.
Absolutely.
For the probiotics.
What are like a good, you think fibrous vegetables? What's like your best, your highest prebiotic veggie list? Do you have any off the top of your head? I always think of onions.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Is it insoluble fiber?
Things with insoluble fiber. So, like, artichokes or, like, cabbage or legumes.
Cruciferous veggies. Anything that's, like, when you're chewing it, when it's raw, it takes a lot of work.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, a piece of celery. Do you guys ever eat celery and just have, like, this cud left in your mouth?
Yeah, like a cow. Like, I'm still chewing it, and then I'm pulling strings out of my teeth.
Yeah. So let's talk about insoluble versus soluble fiber.
Love it.
Because there's a difference and they both matter. But insoluble's the best one for prebiotics, right? As far as prebiotics go. Or am I getting that confused?
No, that's right. So insoluble fiber has a lot of prebiotics.
So do we know the difference between soluble and insoluble right now?
I just looked this up and then I forget it every time on whether or not.
Because I know soluble is soluble in water. It can dissolve in water somewhat, right?
Right.
Damn. Our last episode, we were talking and having a great time, and then we found out it wasn't recording, so we're jumping back into talking about gut health today.
Gut health, gut health, gut health. Let's do it.
Yeah. So before you have a conversation about probiotics, you have to understand the gut microbiome in general. It's just the little organisms that live inside of your colon, and they're good for us, right? It's like there's good bacteria and bad bacteria. Certain bacteria can be considered pathogenic, so they cause sickness and give you a hard time. But there's other little microbes that are like essential to survival. They help us digest our food and much more that we're just now learning, right?
Yeah, there's so many things that the gut microbiome has been related to or associated with in research these days that are relevant to like diseases and even your cognition, your emotional well-being, like so many things that people, researchers are finding is associated with your gut microbiome specifically. Really super interesting.
So probiotics then, in a nutshell. Because you can take probiotic supplements, right?
Right. So probiotics are, in a nutshell, the friendly bacteria in foods. So they're live organisms that can potentially have a positive health effect on the person that's consuming them through foods or through supplements. But they are naturally occurring in certain foods like kimchi, sauerkraut, which we talked a lot about at the beginning of this episode last time we met. So I hope that is still in here. but kombucha and my personal favorite, sourdough bread. There's so many foods that have probiotics in them that can contribute to potentially altering your gut microbiome.
Yeah, because once you eat the food with the probiotic bacteria, it colonizes your gut, right? So it basically starts to actually reproduce in your gut.
Yeah,
so it's not like it just like goes through and then you poop it out. I mean, you do, but also some of it continues to live in that environment.
Right. That's the goal, is that the probiotics you consume will stick around and live in your gut, but it just depends on like a ton of things. Like, so many things can affect your gut microbiome. Like your diet, for example, how many probiotic containing foods you eat, along with prebiotics, which we'll get into. But research is showing that like exercise will affect your gut microbiome, and the medication you take, like antibiotics, if you take antibiotics, that'll affect your gut microbiome. So there's a lot of things that go into your gut microbiome beyond food, but food is one of the main things that can potentially alter the good bacteria that lives in your gut.
Yeah. Libby, what are your thoughts on the whole probiotic thing?
They're great. They're actually, you know,
it's so interesting to me talking about the gut microbiome, because it just kind of reminds you, like, there's bacteria in every single food we consume. Not, I mean, the yogurt and kefir and kimchi and fermented foods have a lot of good bacteria that are really going to help ramp up your gut microbiome. But also, just if you eat a piece of celery, like, there could be small amounts of dirt on that, and you're just eating bacteria, and every different food has different amounts, not necessarily of probiotic bacteria, but it's contributing to the diversity, right, in your overall gut environment.
Like, every time you put something in or near your mouth, you are subjecting yourself to consuming bacteria, right? Unless you,
like, food isn't
live
sterile.
In a sanitized room, you know, like those white rooms with the little suits. But then, right. I don't know. I don't think you could guarantee that your food would be 100% bacterial free unless you're like tube feeding or TPNing yourself. So, right. But
which is why it's so important to eat foods that are rich in probiotics, because you can help recolonize or just help the healthy bacteria colonize in your gut, which can prevent the bad bacteria from growing. So if you eat something that has like bad bacteria on it, the positive bacteria in your gut can help kind of like prevent you from getting sick from that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, minimize risk of symptoms, or at least minimize symptoms. Mm-hmm. And then also, mm-hmm. when it comes to your gut, it's super important that you remember, we're not going to get into the keto chat, but your gut microbiome, bacteria in general, feeds off of starches, carbohydrates. Yeah. So you have
there's also certain strains that actually feed off of fats.
Oh, okay.
But mainly, you know, fibers.
Yes.
Carbohydrates.
And that's why it's important just to eat a well-balanced diet with variety to help feed the bacteria. And it's also important to note that, or I guess just interesting to note that there's all these different like species of probiotics that you can be consuming, and the only type that can live, what am I trying to say? I said it last time. Do you guys know what I'm trying to say?
Yes, it was the types of bacteria. Each, you know, not every person can accommodate or be a appropriate host for every type of probiotic bacteria, right? There's different kinds of probiotic bacterias.
Well, because it varies.
Morgan's face is frozen like this.
Like, Well, I do know there's different, they've found different types of bacteria and different like profiles, meaning different strains and like amounts of those strains. Like, it varies even based on geographical region, right? And ethnicity and like gender.
Totally.
Like
genetics.
We found like associations, like commonalities, say between like people with type 2 diabetes or people with autoimmune conditions. Like, they found kind of similarities, but this is all observational at this point, right?
Yes. Totally. And they've found, like, with people with certain diseases, their gut microbiome looks different than a person with, quote unquote, like a healthy person. So someone with Alzheimer's, for example, has a different gut microbiome than a healthy person, quote unquote. And that's true with multiple things like Alzheimer's, cancer, cardiovascular disease, all sorts of things can alter. Not necessarily like, there's not necessarily like a causal relationship between that. It's more of an association at this point. Because you can't necessarily say that like the altered gut microbiome caused the disease or vice versa. The disease caused the altered gut microbiome, but there's just like an association. So upon observation of the gut microbiome in people with Alzheimer's, it looks different than someone who's healthy and doesn't have Alzheimer's.
It's interesting too, because like with some of these conditions, people are typically on meds, which are going to in turn have their own effect on the microbiome. So, you know, we could hypothesize that, well, especially with antibiotics, you know, it's likely that that's causing certain effects on the gut microbiome. But yeah, right now the associations are pretty broad when you're looking at just people with these diseases and people. So this is a random fact, and I remember this from a conference I went to. There was an excellent speaker on the gut microbiome. But one big difference they've observed is between people who were born via C-section compared with those who are, you know, come by natural vaginal birth. They've seen like similarities in the gut microbiome of people like C-section babies.
I've heard that too, Cody. That's so interesting.
I mean, if you think about the birthing process, there's a lot of bacteria introduced into the baby's mouth, you know, and then they'll find.
Yeah. And well, and you also have to think like when you get a C-section, right? It's a sterile process because you don't want to have the mother get an infection too. So it's just like they're brought into the sterile environment instead of coming out, right? You know, the way that they're not supposed to, right? Because not everybody can have a natural vaginal birth. But it's so interesting that that first little step into the world has such a huge impact long term on your immune system and on your gut microbiome. It's crazy. I think,
because
if
you think of a baby in utero and say the baby's going to be born via C-section, there's not bacteria in there in their GI tract, right? That has to, once you are born, that has to be introduced into your GI tract. And for, you know, a natural birth, it's through their mouth. But and thereafter, breast milk affects it as well.
Yeah, because the breast milk would naturally have some probiotics in it. I think I've also seen formula.
A lot of with infant formulas now are adding probiotics because
they're trying to make it as close to breast milk now as possible, because there's all this really great research about, you know, brain development and overall health of an infant and breastfeeding, right? And not, you know, if you're listening to this and you're like, you couldn't breastfeed or whatever your case was, absolutely, it's okay. I'm not, you know, I'm not attacking people who don't breastfeed at all, because I know that it's really challenging.
There's some
for a
real
lot of
challenges.
People. Real challenges. And some people just can't. And that's totally, totally fine. We are just discussing.
But even now with like formulas with the added probiotics, the technology is just so much better than it was even like when we were born, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Formula has come a long way.
Yeah, and they have so many different,
yeah,
you know, different kinds. It's interesting. Science, man. Science.
Yeah. So while we're just kind of painting a broad picture with the gut microbiome, the other big thing is prebiotics, right? So that's what's going to feed the probiotics, the bacteria.
Yes. And this is going to be your fruits and veggies. We talked about this last time, and but like the ones that always come to my mind for prebiotics are specifically cabbage and onions.
Yes, because they have lots of good fiber, and the probiotics, they're living organisms and they need to survive off of something, and they like the fiber. They want to eat the fiber. They need it.
Yes.
And so that's why, I mean, we keep talking about supplements, but that's why it's so important to eat your food rather than supplements if you can, because when you're eating food or a full meal, you get the fiber, you get all of the additional nutrients that you wouldn't get when you're just eating, like taking probiotics tablets. Your probiotics need the fiber to survive. And so if you eat them together, boom, bang.
We were getting confused about this to great lengths last time, the difference between soluble and insoluble fiber. So let's put it to rest. What's the difference?
Today's the day. Today is the day. I love fiber. I'm jumping in. Okay. So you have your insoluble fiber, and this is what is going to add bulk to your stool, and it's going to pass quickly through your gut. Okay. So this is the kind that's going to help you prevent constipation. So this is your whole grains, wheat, bran, nuts, beans, raw fruits, and veggies. Did I miss anything regarding insoluble fiber?
So
no.
Okay.
So insoluble is, I just want to mention so people can visualize, it's like it forms a gel. So it's soluble in water and, or excuse me, soluble fiber.
Damn it, Cody. Oh.
You were talking about insoluble?
This one.
Yes, insoluble fiber. We're saying it one more time. So insoluble fiber helps to prevent constipation. It adds bulk to stool, softens stool, and then it passes really quickly through your gut. So this is your whole grains, wheat, bran, nuts, beans, raw fruits, and vegetables. Okay.
Especially
cannot
the
break
skins.
It all down. Yes, especially the skins. Leave the skins on your veggies when you can. And then soluble fiber. Cody, are you ready? Are you going to do it? Or do you want me to do
it? Go for it.
Okay. So soluble fiber is like a sponge. So it draws fluid in. And this is what draws the water in to make that stool soft that you've bulked up with your insoluble fiber. So soluble fiber acts like a sponge. This is the one that helps to lower your cholesterol and your blood glucose levels. And that's because it binds with bile in the stomach. And then you poop that bile out. And then your liver creates more bile by pulling cholesterol from the blood and helping to lower your cholesterol, which is great. And then examples of our soluble fiber is oat bran, barley, peas, citrus, and potatoes. So like your starchy veggies are really great soluble fiber.
Also, I saw like lentils and beans. So a lot of these foods have both. And I think that's why it's so confusing. These are all high fiber foods and they have both soluble and insoluble in different proportions. So when we're bringing up examples of foods that have a high amount of soluble fiber, it also has insoluble fiber. Just it's an extra good source of the soluble.
Yeah, absolutely. And then when you cook a fruit or a vegetable, so a raw fruit or vegetable is a great source of an insoluble. And when you cook it, you get more, it has a higher proportion of soluble versus the insoluble because you've helped to break down some of those insoluble fibers already before you put them in your mouth and eat them. So
that's so cool.
We love fiber. Oh my God. I wish that we had that whole conversation from last time. We, honest to God, we messed it up so bad. Like this happens all the time. I talk about fiber daily and I always get it mixed up. And really the point is eat a mix, like raw veggies, cooked veggies, grains. It's all important, and we struggle too.
It's confusing. Yeah, but so I have, while we're on the topic of fiber, I have some numbers in case anyone's wondering how much fiber they should get. So these are general recommendations for men ages 50 and under. So younger men, 38 grams per day. Younger women age 50 and under, 25 grams per day. And then for older adults, so men over 50 is 30 grams per day. Women over 50 is 21 grams per day.
So good to know. And also make sure you're drinking your water. Get a lot of fiber, drink your water, and move around. Because if you increase your fiber too quickly and you don't drink enough water and you sit at your desk all day, you will get constipated. Yes.
Or the opposite of you eat too much fiber and it runs through you like a freight train. And that's not fun either.
Neither one. You probably won't die, but you could.
We had such a nice constipation conversation last time. Like, just making sure that you're getting movement in your day, especially after meals, is huge. Like, it really helps your digestion.
Yeah, peristalsis. It's aided by gravity and exercise.
Yes.
And peristalsis, for those of you who don't know, is like your intestines have these muscles inside of them, and they basically contract and move and help your food just work their way down till you poop.
And then you get excited and you say, I pooped, and everybody has a really nice day.
Mm-hmm. Gut health.
So back to probiotics, because I know probiotic supplements are really trendy right now. You can find them in multiple stores, and not only in, there's like versions that are on the shelf next to like your NyQuil, and then there's versions that are in the refrigerated section. So what do we think of probiotic supplements? What should people consider?
I would question how well the probiotics that are on the shelf work, because we know that probiotics require a very specific environment that they need to live in. And most of the time that's a cold environment. So for example, I did a master's thesis on yogurt and how it affected people's cognition. So we gave everybody yogurt every day for 3 months to see if it affected their cognitive function. And turns out it really didn't in our study, which doesn't mean really a whole lot. Just maybe it was the probiotic strain. Or another thing we considered is that what if the yogurt didn't stay cold enough for some of the participants and the probiotic died? Like all of these things could have happened that would have affected that. But it is shown that, you know, probiotics need to be in a certain temperature to live. And so the probiotics that are on this shelf, I don't know. To me, it seems strange that that's even a thing, but maybe I'm missing something. I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I have a hard time with it too. Which, I mean, if you want a good supplement episode, we had one last season. That's, you know, that's in our archives, but it's just hard for me. You know, and obviously I would like to just like break one open and look at it under a microscope. And if it's moving around and there's clearly live bacteria in it, I'm excited. But I don't know enough about probiotic supplements, honestly, to say, yes, they work. No, they don't work. And because they're a supplement, they're not heavily regulated. So I would definitely be very specific and very picky about what ones you're buying. You know, just because it's the cheapest doesn't make it the worst, but it also doesn't make it the best. And same with the most expensive supplement on the shelf, you know, that doesn't mean that it's good. So, you know, I would definitely do your homework on it and make sure that it is doing it for you. And then, you know, if you have true GI problems and you go to the physician and they're prescribing probiotics, I would absolutely ask them, like, and they might have really good resources too. I would love to like talk to a GI doc one time about like supplements and stuff that they would know more about in regards to how our gut, you know, uses that supplement. But again, I'd be really hesitant. Mm-hmm. And as we've discussed, there's so many options for food. Yogurt is great. Greek yogurt's the best. So is kefir, which is that liquid yogurt. You know, anything with live cultures, I would say always try food first, because supplements can get really pricey and might not be working. So.
And just to add on that, Libby, have you guys looked at probiotic supplements? They're so fucking expensive. I've never.
They are.
They're so expensive. And when you think about, you know, you could get the same benefits from eating food with other benefits because you're getting all these other nutrients with it. So it just seems insane to me.
Yeah.
That my supplements that expensive when a lot of these really beneficial probiotics are also in a lot of foods that you can buy for pretty cheap.
Yep. Yeah.
I think we just don't have enough evidence to really concretely recommend, like make recommendations for supplementation on probiotics for people. Like I think right now the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, they're just, you know, their stance is include a variety of fermented foods in your diet. Like you're going to get the benefits It's safe. You know, if you look at some of these probiotic supplements, assuming that they are delivered to your gut or a significant amount of them, there's a lot of bacteria, you know, that much more concentrated than you would get in yogurt or kimchi, right? So I think, and you see this with other topics in nutrition as well, people assume that more is better, right? Like, oh, I just need more protein, or I just need to drink a ton of water. Well, you can overdo it because the dose is in the poison, right? Or the poison is in the dose. Yeah. The dose makes the poison, whatever.
I like it too. Yeah, no, totally. Totally agree with that, Cody. And it's just, it's so, again, most of the research for this is really young and it's really subjective. Yeah. Like, we don't have a lot of good, true research that's like, this is how you make your gut microbiome be the very best, right? There's a lot of factors that play into it. And we do know a lot of things, right? Like probiotics, prebiotics, good fiber, water, lifestyle, all of these things do affect your gut microbiome. But again, just like when people like overdo it on vitamin C and then they're like, I pee 100 times a day. And it's like, well, you're peeing out that, you know, the 15,000 milligrams of vitamin C you're pounding every day to try and not get thick. Like, you only can use so much. And then, you know, if it's a water soluble vitamin, you're just going to pee a lot. So,
right.
And with probiotics, I think it's the other end where you'll get diarrhea.
Yeah. Well, okay. So there's certain people who really shouldn't take probiotics. Like, it can actually be dangerous, right?
Mm-hmm. Like anybody with a weakened immune system, basically.
Yeah.
Because it's still bacteria. It's good bacteria, but like Cody said, like too much of a good thing.
Too much of a good thing. Say someone has been on antibiotics for a long time. You know, it can just be, if you're introducing one strain into your gut all at once in large amounts, like, that's going to disrupt the natural balance that should be happening, because it's not just one type of bacteria that live there. It's many, and they all interact in this little jungle
of your gut.
Yeah.
The jungle.
I was reading a study where they found, so this is an area I need to do more educating myself on, is the gut brain axis and like the relationship between your microbiome and your nervous system and stuff. But I read that they found in one study, certain strains of bacteria were actually signaling cells within the gut that, make serotonin. So you have serotonin as like a neurotransmitter in your brain, but it's also in your gut. And isn't that just crazy? I mean, if you think about on this level, this microscopic level, these organisms are directly interfacing with our body's own production of neurotransmitters, which affects how we feel, you know? Like, that fact alone is so exciting.
It's so cool. And that's a huge area in research right now. Like Libby said, it's the study of your gut microbiome and probiotics and how it can affect your gut microbiome. It's pretty new. Like, in the last probably 20 years, we've started to really look into it. Probiotics have been around for forever, but somehow we're just now realizing the effect that these little tiny microbes in our gut, they can have an effect on how your brain functions. And in turn, it affects your emotional well-being. It can affect your mood and disorders and all of these things that we're just now finding out about. So it's super interesting. I'm excited to see what we find in the next few years.
Yeah, me too. Isn't it crazy too? Like, we have this modern science and we're starting to kind of notice these things and discover them and actually start to study them in a structured way. And yet these are things people have been eating for thousands of years. And you don't have to know the details to get the benefits, maybe, you know?
And part of it too is the lack of eating those things, because we've seen with the typical Western diet, which would be high saturated fat, a lot of sugar, minimal vegetables, and probably minimal fermented foods as well. We've seen with that specific diet, an altered gut microbiome, along with an increased odds of getting a neurological disease. So I think with the change in diet over the past 50 or so years, we're noticing a lot more things that we didn't know about before.
Because of the lack of those probiotics and prebiotics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And at some point, you know, we're going to have my aunt come on and talk about longevity. And there's this huge tie between fermented foods and longevity and, you know, investigating people in different countries and on different continents that include a lot of diets that are really high in pre and probiotics. And their gut microbiomes do look differently. And it's super cool. And I love it because guess what? All you have to do is eat. Like, you get to eat mm-hmm. for health. Aren't we excited about it? I sure am. Yeah.
I love it. And you don't really, it's like, you don't really have to cut anything out. You just
it's
add
all
things.
About
like
the variety.
Yeah.
And just increasing the types of food that you don't really eat, like more probiotics, more fruit and veggies, more grains. And you can still eat all the things you love. I love nutrition. I love
Me
food.
Me too. It's
I so was fun. Just thinking of this today, guys. I was in the hospital and I was like, oh, it's so fun to try and eat a variety and just try different things. I don't know. That sounds really general.
Yeah. Today I made a Greek bulgur bowl and it was so good. It had roasted chickpeas, bulgur, which I never really eat. I've had a couple times, but it's pretty rare that I ever cook it. And then like a Greek salad with feta cheese and a vinaigrette and some veggies like cucumber and tomato. And it was so good.
That's
okay,
amazing.
So chickpeas and bulgur. Mm-hmm. We've got mm-hmm. our soluble fiber. Mm-hmm. Or no, insoluble from the bulgur brand, right? Or like mm-hmm. the...
Yeah.
So that's...
Insoluble. And then chickpea has both soluble and insoluble. I think it's probably mm-hmm. more soluble because chickpeas and lentils are usually in the same class and they're more soluble fiber. And then beans are more insoluble. Oh. So if you're beans and then you have your pulses and so you have pulses and you have legumes. Mm-hmm. And I think that isn't chickpea a pulse or is it a legume? I think it's a pulse.
I think they're all, is a pulse a type of legume?
So there's legumes that are beans, and then there's pulses, and that's like your peas, lentils, chickpeas,
oh.
I think.
Oh.
And I might have misspoke about the lentils. I'm fairly positive lentils are a pulse. There's pulses, and then there's legumes. And they're similar, but they're not the same.
Same but different.
We're learning. So the cucumbers and tomatoes would have insoluble
in higher amounts because they're raw. Yeah.
Yep.
I love it. Look at you. You had a really, that's a super high fiber meal though. That's like,
it was
probably like 15 grams of fiber in that meal, which is like substantial. So as we're talking more about fiber, greater than 3 grams per serving is considered a high amount of fiber. So it's harder to get 30 grams of fiber in a day than you actually think, because like 2 cups of like spring greens has like barely 3 grams of fiber in it. So, and that's like a fair amount of salad. So.
Yeah. I think what does it for me are I eat a lot of beans and lentils and chickpeas, and that always adds so much fiber to my meals.
Yes. Yeah. And I eat a lot of avocado, and avocado is shockingly high in fiber. I don't think of it as being high in fiber because it's so creamy, you know, like it doesn't really, it's not textured. Yeah. It's smooth. It's buttery almost. And then it's one of the higher fiber foods. So I think there's mm-hmm. there's 7 grams in a whole avocado, 8 grams.
Wow.
And like a medium sized avocado. Like a lot. Avocado. It's pretty impressive. Yeah. So.
Okay. I think we need to get into questions.
Ooh, yes. Did you? Yeah. I don't know that I had any this week.
I have.
Just one.
I have a couple for us on our page. Okay. Question number one. Does it really benefit muscles to consume protein within 30 minutes of a workout?
Ooh.
Or creatine?
That's a good question. I think the short answer is yes.
Yeah, it's a good question because right now in the research field, I keep going back to research because I'm a research gal. I love it. I love research. And that's always what I lean towards. In research right now, it's up in the air. Like, there's so many new studies coming out that are like, does the timing of protein really matter that much? We used to say have protein within 30 minutes. And then it was within 30 minutes to 2 hours. Like, it keeps changing. So I think the statement is that, yeah, sooner than later is probably the best. But really, as long as you have protein within like 2 hours of a workout, you're not going to like lose all your gains, basically.
Yeah. That's a great,
what do you think?
I mean, and honestly, you know, when we're studying this, of course, we're going to quantify it like 30 minutes, 2 hours, but it's your body and every body is different. But I think, yeah, probably sooner is better, you know, after you work out. Have a snack that has, you know, easily absorbed carbohydrate and protein. Because the other big part too is replenishing glycogen that you've used up during your workout, right?
Yeah, it's not just about protein. You want to have protein and carbs. Very important.
Yeah. And usually with like post-workout meals, you do want to avoid things that are higher in fat because that just slows absorption of those carbs and protein.
Mm-hmm. And she also asked about creatine.
Creatine.
So from what I could find, creatine is best consumed after a workout. And there actually is research to show that it can help with building muscle mass compared to
not supplementing.
Not having that. Yeah, exactly. I'm just so conflicted with supplements because I'm a food first gal. I think that if you get done at the gym and you can go have a meal or a really nutritious snack after a workout, that's your best bet. But if you're totally set on creatine and you want to have creatine either before or after a workout, the research is showing that after is key. And there's actually pretty good research on
it.
So I can't argue it. I'm just a little bit skeptical with all supplements because they're not that regulated. So just make sure you do your research on that.
Yeah. Creatine is one that there's a pretty good body of research on, but I also feel like it depends on your goals. You know, like if you're a weekend warrior and you are exercising to feel healthy and, you know, improve your confidence and build muscle, then maybe you don't need to supplement with creatine. Whereas if you're super serious and maybe you're going into competition or you really need to build a lot of muscle mass and maintain it, then maybe you are looking for that edge and it's, you know, you may think about supplementing.
Right. Cody, that's a good point because it feels like your average person that's just, you know, trying to be healthy and wants to start working out or has already been working out, there are a ton of other things you could do other than creatine to
get that.
True. So think about like your overall diet. Is there anything you could maybe change just a little bit in your diet before you add the supplements? I don't know. Right.
Well, cause if you think of creatine specifically, like that is found in like meats, right? Like, cause it's an amino acid. So you it's a naturally occurring substance that your body uses and your muscles use, but you might get it from meat or tuna. But if you look at how much of that food you would have to eat to get what you're getting from the supplement, it's like a ridiculous amount. So yeah, where I don't know. I could see it either way from the food first perspective, obviously is preferable, but at the same time, there are real benefits to be had by getting that concentrated dose through a supplement that you wouldn't otherwise get just from, you know, a healthy diet.
Right. But I would say, like, look at your overall diet, look at your activity levels, look at all these things that contribute to, that could possibly contribute to your goals, and maybe try to alter those if you need to before you start adding supplements. Absolutely. Because your supplements won't be that beneficial if your overall daily meals and activity levels aren't balanced.
Like, it's not going to make up for, yeah, an unbalanced diet.
Absolutely. Okay, next one. This one made me laugh. My boyfriend drinks an insane amount of fruit juice because he thinks it's healthy. Please help.
Oh my gosh, this reminds me of my job.
You guys. Okay, this honest to goodness, I'm not against fruit juice. I'm not. But when my nieces or nephews want a glass of juice, if they ask me for it, they get watered down juice. I give them half juice, half water. And it's because I feel that it's just a really concentrated amount of a set. I mean, it's essentially sugar, and it's 100% natural sugar. Okay. News alert. All sugar is 100% natural unless you know, like, even sugar, white sugar that you bake with is natural. Okay. It comes from a fucking plant. I digress. But my opinion on juice is you will always get a better benefit from eating an orange than you will get from having a glass of orange juice. Does that mean you should never have orange juice? Absolutely not. Okay. If you like orange juice, drink the orange juice. It does. It has a concentrated amount of vitamin C, and most orange juices have vitamin D added in as well. However, if you eat an orange, you're also going to get a really concentrated amount of vitamin C, potentially more because you're eating, you know, the white part on it that also has a good amount of it. You're getting fiber. You're getting all the micro and macronutrients that get flushed out when you take a pulp out of the juice. And you're going to feel fuller for longer. Okay. So you're getting more value, more bang for your buck.
Delayed blood glucose. Spikes.
Yeah. You're not going to have a sugar spike because for diabetics, that's what you do when their blood sugar is low. You give them 4 ounces of juice, you wait 15 minutes, and typically the blood glucose goes up like 50 or 60 points. Mm-hmm. So, which is significant. So I could go on for days about juice, not saying don't drink juice, but you'd be better off to fill those fluids with water and eat an orange, or have one glass of juice, because it is so concentrated. It already has so much of your DRI or your RDA. I always get those mixed up. Your daily recommended amount for vitamin C in it, that, like, what, I mean, there's no reason that you need more than one glass a day, essentially, unless you're diabetic and that's how you fix your lows. Maybe.
So for kids, they actually don't recommend more than 4 ounces a day. So, like, if you think about 4 ounces, it's like, if you think about a measuring cup, like one cup, it's half of that. So
yeah, it's a half.
It's like less than a glass of wine.
It's a standard. It's a standard drink of wine. 4 ounces. That's what's recommended.
And I thought it was 5.
No, wine is 4. Beer is 8 or 12. 8. Liquor is 1.5. And juice is also 4. And I think it might be 6 or 8 for adults. It's not much more than kids, though. I don't think it's double. I think it's 6 ounces for adults.
Okay. For those ounces of beer and liquor, were those just the standardized sizes for a standard drink?
Yeah, so it's like, for a standard drink, what's recommended for an adult per day is, you know, one standard glass of beer, wine, or liquor, which is 4 ounces, 8 ounces, 1.5 ounces.
And that's based on the alcohol content, correct?
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure, based on how much alcohol is in it. So like, if you're drinking a beer that you almost have to chew, like Guinness, probably only 6 or 4 ounces. But
yeah. Have either of you looked into the implications of alcohol on the gut microbiome?
Ooh, I don't want to. No.
You know what? There was some research, though, because beer and wine are both fermented foods.
Actually, that's so true. especially if they're homebrewed, which who is out there homebrewing their own beer? I don't know.
Well, like microbreweries are so hot right now, and a lot of them do fresh hop beers.
Ooh,
so they take yeah. They're a fresh hop, and they're very bitter. It's a bitter beer, but they're super good. So where Ooh. I live, there's a bunch of microbrews, and they do a festival every year, and it's like a fresh hop ale fest. And I make myself feel better about the copious amounts of beer that I consume. Because I'm like, hey, you know how much
fermented foods?
How many probiotics is in this fresh hop beer? Like, yeah.
I love that. That's actually so true. I remember not last summer, but the summer before, one of our professors who I don't want to say her name. I don't know if we can, but she worked with your aunt Libby mm-hmm. on a book that they wrote together about the 7 blue zones. And she had a presentation in Boise that she did at a brewery. And while she was presenting, mm-hmm. she was like, okay, you're all drinking beer and you're also getting your probiotics. And then she talked about probiotics, and it was so cool because beer is a fermented food. And so it does have those probiotics in it.
Yes.
Some of them, like your classic Coors Light, debatable, but
yeah,
that's awesome though. Well, and alcohol, I think, you know, while we're on the topic of research and evidence-based practice, you know, alcohol mm-hmm. is, it's not as black and white as just alcohol is bad and you should never have any ever. Like, it's recommended or not recommended, but they found in research that people who drink one standard drink per day lower their risk for cardiovascular disease. And that's not even talking about the benefits of a drink with ferment, or a fermented drink like beer, or, you know, resveratrol from red wine, like the antioxidants. It's not even that benefit. It's just from the alcohol itself. Isn't that interesting?
It is. It is super interesting.
What? Do you think it's like the relaxing effect that alcohol has on you, and it kind of like lowers your stress?
It's also a blood thinner.
Ooh. I don't know. So, it's one of those things. That's the results they got. That's what we've
observed. If there's ever a study for this, I want to be in. I'm in.
I'll be in too.
Sign me up.
Like,
we prescribe you all to have one drink a day.
Deal. Only one? That would be my problem though. Like, can I only have one?
Right.
Because sometimes on a Saturday, I wanna have a few. Not as many as I had this Saturday, but you know.
I just want to tell that to people who are like, no, I'm clean. I never drink alcohol. Like, you know, I can't drink, or I'm not going to have my six pack anymore or whatever. I'm like, well, actually, there's this.
In 50 years, I want to know how your heart is. Let's meet and compare labs. I want to see what happens.
And like your quality of life, like when you look back on your life, are you going to want to look back and be like, man, I had fun not drinking every day and worrying about food so much because of what it would do for my six pack? Nobody wants to live like that.
Right. Yeah.
I want to worry about my six pack of beer.
Me too. I just want to have a fun life and enjoy food.
Amen.
And still be healthy, which we all can do.
Amen. I want to be sitting on this beach drinking with you guys, as is our background right now.
Okay, guys, I think we can wrap it up. Was there any other questions?
I didn't have any.
So next week is, or two, this Thursday is orthorexia, and the following week is sports nutrition.
I love it, you guys. It's going to be great.
Thanks for listening to Dietitian Power Hour. Give us a follow on Instagram at Dietitian Power Hour Pod.
You can find us on Spotify or wherever you like to listen. And please drop us some stars if you enjoyed our content.